I mean, surprise birthday party, I would take it.
Yeah, I guess it could be good. All right, I'm Kimberly Adams. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we try to make today make sense.
And I'm Megan McCarty Carino. Thank you so much for joining us. It's Thursday, also known around these parts as Hollowed Out Shell Thursday. So, Kimberly, how's your shell feeling today? Ready to hollow everyone else's shell out?
Exceptionally hollow. It's exceptionally hollow. I have been very careful about how much of the Derek Chauvin trial I consume because it is absolutely re-traumatizing. But today I did watch some of the testimony from medical professionals about how George Floyd was killed. And just listening to these extreme details, even like how he was trying to lift his body up with his knuckles and, you know, to get some air into his lungs, you know, it just is more evidence, you know, if the video wasn't enough, of just how much this man suffered as he was dying. And it's hard. And I think that you know, my heart goes out to the people in Minnesota who are, you know, feeling this very viscerally, but also just every Black person everywhere who is trying to navigate their day-to-day lives while almost someone's, like, humanity is being debated and
put on trial,
and some of the language and some of the stereotypes that are coming up in the trial. And, you know, due process is extremely important, especially in cases like this. But just listening to some of the arguments and then the details about what was happening to his body as he died it's just real hard. It's real hard. And as my own sort of self-preservation and trying to exist and work and move about my day-to-day life, it's sort of like, how am I respectful and see it and witness it as somebody in the country? Because this is an important moment, but also function as a human being. Have you watched any of it?
I sort of caught up on what happened yesterday with, you know, some of the testimony. I read Charles Blow had an op-ed in the New York Times yesterday about, you know, some of the proceedings and this kind of legal doctrine, which is, it's actually sort of called lawful but awful, which I guess was discussed at the trial. And, you know, just this idea of everyone who knows what happened in that video knows that it was awful, and yet, you know, we're having a trial to determine if it was lawful. And there have been so many cases, time after time, again, as you know, where things that are on video that are awful are deemed to be lawful. And I guess the actual terms kind of go back to a Supreme Court case, but just this kind of dissonance of that concept and kind of where do we go from there? And yeah, I mean, today the pulmonologist, you know, who's you're discussing, the medical details are really hard to hear. I thought one of the articles, you know, that you sent out for this had a warning on it, like the video, like this includes traumatizing details and something about hearing even without the video. I mean, just hearing it being medically dissected like that it's really hard.
Certainly fits into the hollowed out shell of a Thursday.
Certainly does.
And while we're here, pandemic still going on.
It's still going.
Before we get to your pandemic thing, did you also see the pandemic news that like 1 in 3 people that had COVID end up with some sort of mental or neurological disorder?
I have seen that. I've seen it. I have seen it a little bit picked apart by some of the scientists that I follow. But I mean,
anxiety and depression, and other
which
things
is
like
which
that,
makes sense
still.
If you have a serious illness is a trauma and will cause, you know, mental illness or, you know, will cause mental effects. And I think that, you know, it just really speaks to, this pandemic for folks who have gotten sick, it's not over. There are, you know, so many people with long COVID, the mental effects of it will last for a very long time. But we did get something a little good.
Less hollow.
This week. Okay, yeah. On the gradation of hollow, on the less end. So the CDC this week, it's kind of a good and bad news. So the CDC this week finally clarified that surface transmission of COVID is unlikely. Something that, you know, I mean, I think many people had sort of accepted and had been maybe stopped washing their groceries a little while ago. Remember there was that video at the beginning of the pandemic, the doctor teaching everyone how to set up a clean space and how to wipe down your Doritos and everything. Finally, the CDC
has
kind
of... It's funny we can laugh about it now, isn't it?
I know.
It was so scary then.
You know, it was like you couldn't do anything without a, you know, thing of Lysol wipes. It was very scary. But yeah, so, I mean, this has been fairly common scientific knowledge for quite a long time that surface transmission is... has not been a driver of the SARS-CoV-2 virus. And yet it was just stuck in a lot of the official guidance. The CDC, the WHO had been sort of slow to acknowledge that surface transmission really wasn't happening. I mean, if you look into some of the very good case studies that have been done, I mean, there have been... This has been the most studied virus in terms of its transmission. And I think there has been one single, perhaps documented case where surface transmission might have happened. Out of all of the, you know, hundreds of really in-depth case studies that have been done. And so the CDC was really a little slow to kind of pick up on this and to change its guidelines. I guess it did over the summer. Last summer, it did say that it wasn't the primary driver of transmission. Mm-hmm. But now it is saying that I think the statistic that they say, but I'm going to look it up. Okay, so the risk of contracting the virus from touching a contaminated surface, they say, is less than 1 in 10,000. And so, you know, it's kind of like absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. They still want to say there's a chance that it could happen, but there really have been no documented cases of this happening. You know... It's one of those things where it's like, well, there's what's the harm in just having people, you know, wipe down all of their groceries and, you know, have stores cleaning everything and have all of, you know, this extreme hygiene that we've had during the, what's the harm in that?
All the wipes going into landfills.
Well, yeah, there's that. And this has been a significant cost for businesses, particularly, you know, small businesses to comply with all of this cleaning. It's been kind of come to be expected that when you, you know, go to a business or whatever, you know, that you just see everyone cleaning every 2 seconds, cleaning up. There's, you know, they're scrubbing the walls and CDC guidance on this stuff influences, you know, school guidance in terms of how schools can reopen. It influences, you know, what businesses have to do to keep their, you know, customers safe and their workers safe. And in fact, you know, I kind of cheated. There's another story this morning that, you know, OSHA has kind of been holding back its emergency standards for workplaces, which hadn't been issued during the previous administration, but a lot of worker advocates were hoping were going to be issued. But, you know, these kinds of CDC guidelines influence how safety guidelines go into place for workers. And it's enormously important because so many places, in the absence of guidance around or mm-hmm. in, you know, with this guidance about surface transmission taking up so much of the oxygen, had kind of not done the measures that actually are the most important, which has to do with ventilation and mm-hmm. aerosol and airborne transmission of COVID, which we have known from almost the very beginning of the pandemic is the primary driver. You know, we had the choir practice in Washington really early on. Every case study that has been done has shown that COVID is airborne. And, you know, these kind of big institutions have been so slow to catch up. And it has really affected the safety of workplaces, the ability of schools to open or not, you know, things that really have affected people's lives. And instead, we've gotten all of this hygiene theater of scrubbing the ceiling.
Yeah, it's everybody.
And yeah, so yeah. This is an important turning point. I applaud the CDC for doing this now. It's unfortunate that it took so long, but it's a good thing that it has happened now.
Yeah, all right. It's like everybody was spending their money and resources wiping down surfaces instead of changing out their air filtration systems.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, well, or installing an air purifier or whatever. That is the most important part.
So slowly coming out of the hollowed out shell. I actually want you to go first.
Okay. Well, Kimberly, I kind of picked this one a little bit for you, especially.
Oh, thank you.
because of what we talked about on Monday, which you got a lot of listener response on your choice of your favorite Star Trek series being Voyager. But
yes, apparently I have some more watching to do.
That notwithstanding, I have chosen as my Make Me Smile this gaining momentum for LeVar Burton to be the new host of Jeopardy. Of course, this came up earlier, you know, it came up in November. There was a petition at, change.org that was started, and LeVar Burton came out and said that he would be interested in doing it. Well, he's back. He's back on Twitter this week saying he really wants to do it. He wants to be the host of Jeopardy, and the change.org petition now has 200,000 signatures, and people are just getting really pumped about this. I, huge LeVar Burton and Reading Rainbow fan, watched so much Reading Rainbow as a kid. My parents are kind of like hippies and only let us watch PBS a lot of the time, so I I like mainlined the Reading Rainbow. But I'm not the only one, obviously.
It was so good.
So good. I feel like LeVar Burton on Twitter, it's like LeVar Burton and Dolly Parton are like just the only universals on Twitter that are just beloved.
Yeah.
Everyone on Twitter can agree.
He's done everything. Yeah. He's done, you know, the serious acting with Roots. He's done the sci-fi stuff with, you know, Star Trek Next Generation. And now, and obviously Reading Rainbow, amazing. But he also has a really great podcast called LeVar Burton Reads, which completely appeals to my millennial sense of just wanting LeVar Burton to read to me again. And so he's just like on this podcast reading stories, and I listen to
it while I have to check
swimming
this out
sometimes, and it's so peaceful and wonderful. And a lot of the stories are sci-fi fantasy, and then he talks to the authors sometimes, and it's really cool. So it's just all good stuff. I mean, don't want to tip the scales too hard on Jeopardy, because I know, I'm sure that there are lots of other candidates who really want the job, but LeVar Burton is pretty awesome.
Stephen Colbert tweeted yesterday that he thinks that LeVar Burton should host Jeopardy as Jordy LaForge, and that the buzzers should be phasers and Data should be the judge, and it should be in space, and it should just be Star Trek. So as if you didn't love LeVar Burton enough already, we will completely
we'll see how this
get the Kimberly
out.
Adams vote.
I have to all say, right, I generally don't sign petitions because, you know, I'm a journalist, but that one was hard. That one was hard. When it first came around, I was like, is it ethical for me to sign? Well, that was perfect because I chose my Make Me Smile for you as a follow-up to, yes, to our anime conversation the other day where you were saying that you wanted an anime show that related to British home renovation. That's a little bit tough, but I did find a whole bunch of anime that is set in England or the UK or mystical worlds that are very British-ish. So there are a couple. The one that a lot of people recommend is called Emma, a Victorian romance about a maid who falls in love with a noble, and it's like forbidden love, and okay, that's supposed to be really great. And then there's one that's a little bit more horror, kind of a little bit of comedy called Black Butler, about a demon and a noble person and this arrangement that they have. So that could be cool. And then one of the many people who responded with recommendations on Twitter actually brought up this show that I loved called Spice and Wolf, which is about like sort of a wolf deity that has a humanoid form and this merchant that she buddies up with. And it's cool, not because it's necessarily set in England, but it has a lot of economics in it and a lot of business sense in it. And there's like a ton of negotiation and all of these like merchant type things. So anyway, those are the three that you may want to try out.
And you really did it.
Well, the listeners helped out. I have to say I was getting deluged. So thank you to everyone who sent me ideas. So that's my Make Me Smile. I feel like we're kind of out of the hollowed out shell.
Almost there.
Being respectful that this is going to be the stuff that is sad and serious is important and needs to be sad and serious. But you know what? We can also have some smiles too. So love it.
Oh, thank you, Kimberly. I have a very full weekend then, listening to LeVar Burton podcasts and watching British building-inspired anime. I'm very excited.
Yes. Love it.
All right. That is it for us today. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter. This week, we're taking a closer look at electric vehicles and the White House's big plans to transform the car market. I myself have an electric vehicle. Very excited about that. You can sign up by going to marketplace.org/newsletters.
I will be back tomorrow with Marketplace's Scott Tong, my fellow DC Bureau colleague and one of the few people with whom, at least pre-pandemic, I got to drink with in real life for Economics on Tap and the YouTube live stream. That's at 3:30 p.m. Pacific and 6:30 p.m. Eastern. So Scott and I will actually be in a time zone that's more okay to drink. Although it's always 5 o'clock somewhere, right?
Yeah, I mean, no problems for me.
No judgment. No judgment. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner is our digital producer, and Erica Phillips writes our newsletters and the Make Me Smart explainers on your smart speakers.
Today's program was engineered by Charlton Thorpe. Ben Tolliday with Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. Our senior producer is Donna Tam. The executive director of On Demand is Sitara Nieves.
I can't wait to hear your feedback on anime, because you don't watch any of it now, right?
No, I am a total anime naive.
Let's just say newbie.
3
We need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.